Hello and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Trev. How are you?
I'm all right. How's your week?
My week's been okay. How rude. How's your week been before I start droning on?
Boring.
Boring. Oh, boring. Good.
So, nothing's happened of any note. It's been an incredibly dull week. I've just been doing work, and more work. And no play. All work and no play is the headline of my week.
Well, this is good news for me because it might mean that you're willing to help me out with a bit of a problem I've got, and I could inject a bit of, I don't know, adventure into your otherwise boring week.
Okay. This sounds like something really exciting has happened in your week.
I'm hatching a plan.
Hatching a plan, okay.
Yeah, and it's not going to... Now, but you've got to bear with me. I know it's not going to sound very exciting at first. Just stick with the plan, okay?
Okay.
So I've been, as you know, I've been doing a lot of refurb work to the back garden.
Right, it's not starting off very exciting.
I warned you. But... So,
you've been fixing some trellis to a fence is the most exciting thing that's happened to you.
Well, you might remember the expense and frustration of a new barbecue.
Yeah.
There's been expense of painting fences, new trellises, jet washing. There was the whole thing about needing a new hose, which we had to fix from the kitchen tap. That required a £500 plumbing job, you might remember. So, it's been very expensive and a lot of effort.
Expensive, but not exciting so far.
So imagine my horror when I glance out the front of the house to notice that the fence is beginning to droop relatively severely.
Boom, there it is. There's the excitement. Drooping fence. Okay, I'm in. Here we go.
Now, you're a man who spends years fixing things. We've established that on the podcast before.
Yeah.
And you're probably familiar with the old adage, a stitch in time saves nine.
It's very true, yes.
Worth fixing something before it falls down and requires a lot more fixing.
So you fix the fence, there we are. That's exciting.
Here comes the difficulty. The fence posts, which it seems to have come loose from, are not on my side of the fence. So I do what I think is the neighbourly thing and do some investigation work and go round the corner to the adjoining street who I share the fence with and do some investigation work and find out the bloke's name who shares the fence with me. And I pop a little note through his door.
Didn't knock on the door. Didn't want to do a face-to-face.
I did it first, and then there was no answer, and I thought, well, actually, probably best that I slip a note through, because I'm very neighbourly, and I don't want to ambush the man. I thought, I'll give him time to consider his options, and I put my phone number on there. I said, if there is any expense of fixing the fence, I'm more than happy to contribute. I think it's probably beneficial for both of us that we fix it before it falls down. Here's my phone number. No answer. It's been a few days now. This is where you come in.
Well, I'm not getting involved. I'm not going around. He's clearly not interested in paying out any money to help fix his fence.
It's a shared fence, but I personally believe that the responsibility might be on his side because it's his fence posts that have let me down. And it's going to come down into my garden. So anyway, long story short, I'm not sure if he lives there, if he's on holiday, or if he's simply ignoring me. So
have you staked out the property to see if there's any movement? Are there lights on at night? These are the sort of things you've got to start doing, Ben. You've got to sort of turn into some sort of private detective. Stalk him, basically, is what you've got to do.
I feel like I've given him his window of opportunity, and now I'm hatching a plan, and I need you to, you know, you said you had a boring week, and I need you to support me and be my brother. And I'm expecting loyalty and a favour from you, if I'm being honest.
When we had a little chat before we started recording, you said, I've got something exciting we can talk about, because I said I've had a boring week. I was expecting, frankly, a little bit more than just, can you help me sort of fence out? But
no.
But fine. Let's go with it.
Okay. Well, let's not say I need a favour putting up a fence. Let's say I need a favour pulling off a heist.
Right.
So, there is no sign of my neighbour. He could be dead, by the way. I should point that out. He could be dead inside that house. I've got no idea.
That's true. You've not thought about getting help. He could be lying on a floor, slowly fading away. And all you're doing is banging on the door, going, give me my money!
So, what I need you to do is, I'll come and pick you up. We'll book a fence repairman. I don't know what their official job title is, so we'll go with fence repairman.
Fence repairman, yeah.
But you need to book him. And there's, I've thought this through in detail, right? You book fence repairman, and you pretend you live at my neighbour's property, because there's no sign of him.
Right.
So, fence repairman comes out, he gives you a quote, and you say, yeah, in fact, mate, if you wouldn't mind cracking on doing it, that'd be great. We'll settle up once the job's finished.
How much are you willing to go up to? Because I know from someone that I know who had a fence done recently, it cost them nearly a grand.
Trev, I think you've overlooked the word heist here, my friend.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Make it two. Make it $5,000 for all I care. Right. Agree whatever price he wants. $10,000, fine. Not a problem.
Okay.
So obviously you don't have access to my neighbour's house. So you're going to need to pretend to be the homeowner. But for the time, you're going to have to be sort of pottering around, maybe doing some gardening, maybe some weeding in the bushes, something like that. And then
I've got to be weeding in the bushes.
No, weeding. Weeding.
It's like, it might look odd when fence repairman comes out. I'm just pissing everywhere.
Don't worry, I'll stump up some money to, you know, give you some gardening gloves and a trowel. You know, I'll kick you out, make it look legit.
Yeah.
And all you need to do is be around, welcome him in, tell him what to do, agree to pay him, and then when he's about 5-10 minutes away from completion, I need you to disappear.
Right.
Now, we'll come back to that, because I can see a problem with that, but we'll come back to it. I've thought it all through. The job is then done. My fence is repaired to a very high standard because he thinks he's making a lot of money. You, the homeowner, nothing to do with me, by the way, he hasn't even met me.
No.
You've gone. The job is done. And if he becomes one of those pissy tradesmen who decides, well, I'm going to destroy my hard work because you haven't paid me for it and now you've done a runner, that's when I come out of the house.
Right.
That's when I play the role of dismayed next door neighbour. This is a shared fence. You are committing criminal damage. Cease and desist, or I will phone the police immediately.
He's going to demand monies from you now, though.
No, he's not. I didn't ask him to do any work. But if he's going to vandalise my fence, I'm calling the feds, my friend.
I think he can say that until monies have exchanged hands, that's still his property. All those fence panels are his, so he can do what he wants for
it's
them.
Not the way I see it. I see him vandalising my fence. That's all I'm seeing, so I'm calling the police. We have right. snookered fence repairman. You have buggered off. Now, slightly the problem is that I know you're without a car at the moment.
Yeah, so I'm still now, walking up the road, aren't I, to the station.
I'm happy to come and collect you from Croydon and bring you to my neighbour's house. Like I say, I'll supply you with the gloves and the trowel, even a plastic bucket if you want. Your escape is going to have to be an issue because you can't. I can't drive you away because I need to be seen as dismayed next door neighbour to call the police if he starts kicking off.
Can't you drive me away and then Mrs. Ben comes out as disgruntled neighbour?
I don't think it's fair to embroil Mrs. Ben in the scandal as well. I'm okay. happy to embroil you in it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're quite happy to bring me all the way from fucking Croydon to get involved.
So, first of all, how will you escape?
Well, I know there's a pub just up the road from your house.
Yeah, but so that means you're on foot for a long time. You could be caught.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a bus route and a bus stop.
Near your house?
Quite near, yeah.
Well, I could just sort of run to the bus stop and jump on it.
You'd need to time it to perfection. There are some apps that will tell you when the bus is coming.
Yes.
But you'd need to coincide that with him finishing the job.
That's fine. We can do that.
So,
will
you help?
Uber.
I hate to say it, I think I've tried to organise Ubers before, and I don't think they come to East Grinstead, so you might have to get a local taxi firm.
You don't get Ubers in East Grinstead?
No, wow. You don't.
No, we've only got local cabs out here, local cabs for local people.
So, first things first, will you help me pull off my fence heist?
No.
What do you mean, no?
Well, I mean, it's ridiculous. Let's assume that I will. Right, I've come around. By the way, all the point I'm gardening in this bloke's garden, what if he is in the house? Is he not going to come out and say, what are you doing in my garden?
Yes, I hadn't really had an answer for that. I had highlighted that in my plan as a potential stumbling block.
Mm,
what if my next door neighbour isn't dead? What if he is just ignoring me and spots what's going on? So maybe you'd like a trowel and some sort of pair of saccateurs as some sort of, you know, potentially lethal weapon to fight your way out of his garden.
Well, rather than give me a trowel, give me a shovel. At least I can whack that around his head. around his head if needed.
Okay, so, you know, I mean, that's sort of the risk I'm asking you to be willing to take. I'll have to sort of pay you in some small way, I think, for your trouble. I was hoping you'd do it out of brotherly love, but if you're asking for danger money, I can probably give you, I don't know, 20 quid?
20 quid. 20 quid, that won't even pay for the cab home that I've got, will it? Especially the East Grinstead prices. Especially if it'll be a tractor that will turn up to take me.
Also, one of the other things, presumably you don't want to book a fence repairman under your real name.
No, so, you know, I'd have to book it. Well, if you now know the guy's name, so I'd just book it under his name.
So, I did do some work coming up with some. I used AI to come up with some nom de plumes for you to book a okay. Fence man under. My suggestion, I think you'd like this, Connor Fencington.
Connor Fencington. It sounds like some sort of Irish gentry, doesn't it?
Well, I thought because it's a con, you know, Connor, and Fencington is maybe a bit on the nose. But
is Fencington a real surname?
Not as far as I know. I've never met Mr. Fencington before. Have you?
I mean, if I was called Fencington, I'd start my own fencing company, to be honest. That would be what I'd do.
All right. So if you're not sure about Connor Fencington, would you like some of the AI suggestions?
Go on. Yeah.
Clive Timber.
Clive Timber. Again, you're using wood-based pun.
Yes, the sort of instruction I gave it was to come up with fence-based conning names.
Right. Clive Timber. I could go with that. I quite like that. Clive Timber.
Graham Stainer.
No, that makes me sound dodgy.
I like this one. Nick Splinters.
Nick Splinters. Nick Splinters sounds like an alias for superhero. Nick Splinters is Fence Man.
Fence Man. Doug Posthole. Rickety Rick.
Rickety Rick. I think that's a name that he... If it was Rick Rickety, because he's sort of got a... Like, Rickety is a first name. Rick is. You go, I'm Rick Rickety. I mean, I think it would sound false, but...
It would raise some eyebrows, I think.
Rickety Rick.
Okay. Woodrow Scamley.
Yeah, that's definitely... That sounds like it should be in the House of Lords.
And the last one, Victor Gatecrash. Which of those do you like as your nom de plume?
I think, what was the Clive one? Clive Timber.
Clive Timber. Sounds like Clive. A trustworthy...
Yeah, it's the least suspicious of them. If you know, I mean, otherwise, if it's just fun, let's go with Rickety Rick.
Okay.
So, like, what was Woodrow? What was that one? That was
Woodrow Scamley.
Woodrow Scamley. Hello, I'm Woodrow Scamley. Would you please come and do my fence, you horrid little man?
So I'll come and pick you up. So I'm going to drive from East Grinstead to Croydon and back again.
Well, it's only right. I should have a chauffeur-driven journey wherever I go.
I'm providing you with the tools to sort of fit the bit. You've picked out your name, Woodrow Scamley. Yes. You make the phone call. All you then need to do is vanish. I can give you either the bus fare or, you know, maybe you want to get a cab. I don't mind how you escape. You're taking the risk that the neighbour might either not be dead or come back from holiday, or just pay attention that he's seen you in the garden. So are we on? Can we arrange the date for this?
I could jump on a bike to escape, couldn't I? I could get on a bike to go to the pub, and then later on, once you've had the whatever's going to happen after I've disappeared, you could then come and drive me home because I'll be absolutely shit-faced.
Yeah, I mean, I've only got quite a small car. Do you think it'll fit a bike in it?
We'll get a bike rack, mate. Get a bike rack, put it on the back of the car. I mean, you know, if you're going to think this through, if you need my help, we've got to have everything in place.
The problem is, if Fence Man spots us together, then we're rumbled.
Well, that's why I get there way before he's due, don't we? You know, that's why I'm pottering around in neighbour's garden.
Yeah, and if he sees you escaping on the bike, presumably Fence Man's got a van. He's going to catch you quite easily.
Yeah, then by the time he's got in it, started up, you know, put his tools away, I'm going to be off, aren't I? I'm going to be in the pub.
Now,
gets there.
Could we incorporate any... I mean, I don't want to impose on the rest of your family, but is anyone else busy? I mean, because I'm thinking, if I rush out and play the dismayed neighbour threatening to call the police for criminal damage, I'm pretty sure the actual police aren't going to be putting on the blues and twos to come to this, let's face it, civil matter. So
I'd imagine in East Grinstead, that's a great deal of excitement.
Do you have a spare family member who's willing to impersonate a police officer who could be there in seconds?
Thing is, though, like, then there's a hiring of a police costume, or they've got to be plain clothes. And I kind of feel this isn't a plain clothes matter. CID aren't coming out for offence. Related issue, are they?
Yeah, I'm wondering, for all the props and expenses and petrol money, maybe I should just pay for fence man to come and fix it properly.
I still haven't worked out what happens when I've disappeared and you come out. Even if you phone the police, they're not coming. But I don't think there's a... I think the police would just say, well, I mean, he's done nothing wrong. He's not caused any damage. It's his property, because you've not paid him a penny yet.
I didn't even know there was any work commissioned. All I see is a man damaging my fence.
Would you not then have to pretend to go and knock on the neighbour's door to discuss it? And then what if the real neighbour answers the door? And then, you know, you're scuppered, aren't you?
That's the beauty of the plan. You see, I had thought of this because I know that his next door neighbour, and it's all one big joined up house with like four addresses in the same building, I know one of them is actually abandoned. So I can go and knock on that door knowing full right. well no one's going to answer it.
You're devious, aren't you? Now, Ben, this week I was doing one of my favourite things on the internet.
Oh, not again.
I was reading about philosophical questions, philosophical ideas.
Oh, that's very mature of you.
Well, yeah, I like to read about what the world's about, you know, if I can, because it makes no sense to me, the world. So if I can try and get some sort of idea of some sense of it all, then I think that's a positive thing. So I often go through the internet reading about philosophical ideas, and I often come across philosophical questions that you can discuss with your friends and family. And we've done this before. We've asked philosophical questions before. But I came across a thing this week that was questions that may not have an answer.
Okay. This sounds very intriguing.
But I thought maybe we could try and find answers to them. You know, we're both very philosophical people. You know, I often sit pondering the world. I could be a philosopher. I often wonder how people become a philosopher. You know, is that something that you decide to be? Or is that something, here's the first question, maybe. Is that something that people call you? It's a title that people bestow upon you. Can you decide in life, I'm going to be a philosopher?
I'd say no, because I don't think being a philosopher pays the bills like it might have a few hundred years ago. Who's going to pay my mortgage while I sit around thinking?
Well, I suppose now you'd write books, you would probably do podcasts, you'd be able to make money from being a philosopher. You know, I mean, there are modern day philosophers, aren't there? But they often are also maybe lecturers at universities, and that's, you know, so they do the sort of thing that pays the bills, but their main title is philosopher.
But you see, when I have too much time on my hands to sit around and think, I seem to put my powers to evil to try and work out how to rip off local tradesmen rather than actually solve any problems.
I think the problem is that to be a philosopher, you sort of have to, you've got to be able to convey the ideas and sound really sort of intellectual about them. You know, if you ever hear somebody who's a philosopher, they kind of, I don't know, they sound like they really know what they're talking about. I think the problem is I would just ramble and probably unfinished sentences. I'd get to the end of it and then we could say, well, so what's the point you're making? Because that was just a lot of rambling. I feel you need to have some sense of what you're actually about to say. And I find that when I'm doing my philosophical thinking, Ben, I ramble in my own head and then never actually find an answer.
I listened recently to Brian Cox, Professor Brian Cox, talking quite a lot about space. Mm. And I didn't understand a word he was saying, but the passion and the conviction with which he said it made me think, oh God, you sound clever. You know what you're talking about.
Exactly.
So I think even if you don't know what you're talking about, with enough passion and emphasis, you can kind of sell anything.
The thing is that he does know what he's talking about. I mean, you're at fault in this scenario. I'm the same. I listen to Brian Cox and he's sort of, his TV shows, you know, it's sort of sold that he sort of tells it in layman's terms so you can understand it. And I sit and listen to his programs, and at the end of it, I'm none the wiser because it's all gone completely over my head. Even when he's drawing a thing in the sand, it's like, you're so stupid, I'm going to draw a diagram in the sand for you. I still can't get it.
That's because he's got the showmanship. He's got the sales ability. He could convince me of anything, even if it was completely untrue. If it was coming from the mouth of Professor Brian Cox, I'd just trust him.
All right, well, let's see whether we can find answers to some of these questions and make it believable.
Okay, let's do it.
Karma is often called a human construct. So is it real or not?
Well, so the question is, will the universe willingly balance itself out? If something bad happens, will it rectify it so that something equally good happens?
And I suppose, like any kind of, I wouldn't call it a religious thing, but with any kind of spiritual idea, you can't prove this really one way or another, because sometimes karma does happen. It's almost instant karma. We've all seen those things. We've probably all had it happen to us. I mean, I'll give you my example. Is I remember being at Victoria Station and seeing someone trip over a suitcase and laughing, you know, because that thing you can't help sometimes but laugh when someone falls over. Not if it's an elderly person. You don't sort of go and laugh at an elderly person. But when it's someone, you know, of a young age falling over, there's something inherently funny about it. And as I was laughing, I fell over a suitcase myself. And that was instant karma. That was the universe saying, no, you should have gotten help that person. They may have been hurt, but no, you laughed. So fuck you. Here's another suitcase for you to fall over.
I don't know. I'd say no, because there's been many times I've embarrassed myself, made an ass of myself, hit my head, fallen over, and then I haven't had any sort of reverse karma. I didn't deserve to fall over, bang my head, insert embarrassing moment here, and at no point did the universe make it up to me.
Well, that's really interesting, isn't it? Because I've never thought of karma being a positive thing. I've always thought of karma as a negative thing. That,
yeah, like a revenge instead of you're owed it back.
Yes, there'll be retribution for the bad things. I've never thought of it in the positive.
Yeah, I mean, presumably if karma exists, it has to work both ways, because if you're laughing at someone falling over and they feel, oh, that man just laughed at me falling over a suitcase, and then you fall over a suitcase, then for them, karma's worked in retribution in their favour. That something bad happened to them and then something good happened to them, you fell over. So presumably it does work both ways.
Yeah, I've never thought of it like that.
And also, does karma have to be proportionate? Does the good thing or the bad thing that happened to you have to be of equal proportion to the other one? Like, for example, I'll take two things that have happened to me in recent weeks that I've told you about. I've had to pay out £500 to an emergency plumber.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that's some bad karma, right? That's some bad stuff.
Yeah.
And then, a few days later, my next door neighbour very kindly came round and said, oh, I've been doing my allotment. Here's a couple of spare courgettes. Now, I would say that a £500 emergency call-out fee isn't balanced out by a couple of courgettes, but it was still something nice that happened to me from the universe. So does it have to balance out or not?
Well, it depends on how you're looking at life, doesn't it? I mean, I think if you're... I don't think karma works on a sort of financial basis. It's working on sort of the good and bad. And I think that probably does balance it out. You've had a bad thing happen. Yeah, the money side of it is irrelevant for karma. It's just that's a bad thing that's happened to you. But here's a good thing. Here's a good thing to show you that the world isn't all bad. Here's a nice neighbour offering you a gift of some courgettes. A very basic primeval gift of the harvest has been offered to you. And I would say that that's karma balancing the world out there, you know?
Yeah, but if you said to me, Ben, my house burned down, but I found a quid in the gutter, then I wouldn't say, oh, good karma, eh? Yeah, it doesn't quite work like that, does it?
Well, no. I mean, if karma was equal, then, you know, you'd have 450 quid land on your doorstep, but that's not how karma works. I do feel that karma is a human construct. I'm not sure it does exist. I think we all choose to see it at times, and but yeah, we all use that phrase, what goes around comes around. You know, we all, I use that phrase a lot, but I don't think I necessarily believe it. I think it's almost telling myself that if someone's been shitty to me, or if I've seen someone acting shit to someone else, I always sort of like to tell myself, well, you know, they'll get their karma. But I'm not sure I'd believe it. I think I tell myself it to just make things feel a little better.
I mean, if I don't want to get things too horrible, but I can absolutely disprove karma exists by two words. Jimmy Savile. He died a hero. His coffin was carried. His gold-plated coffin was paraded down the street, and as people cheered and cried and thought, "Oh, what a shame!" So he never saw any sort of karmic justice at all. It's only since his death, but you know, that doesn't matter to him anymore, does it? He lived his life a fucking legend, as far as he was concerned.
Is karma constrained to your lifespan? The karma now is that his reputation is in tatters. He's a running joke, let's face it. He's seen as an evil man. And he went to his grave thinking he was this hero, you know, everyone loved him. Karma may not necessarily work in your lifetime.
Well, that seems unfair if you get reincarnated and then you get the consequences of your previous life lumbered on you.
I'm not saying anything about reincarnation. I'm just saying that karma might work in that he's completely post his death, his reputation completely shattered.
But if death is the end of it, without any sort of afterlife or sort of heavenly existence, or even not necessarily heavenly, but any sort of afterlife existence at all, if there's no consequences, if you're dead, full stop, that's the end of it, then you won't know. So it's irrelevant.
What does it matter if you don't know? Or not. The fact is, your reputation, now that you're dead, it doesn't really matter that you're alive or dead. You know, no one now sees him as the saint he was. His gravestone has been ripped away. As I say, he's this evil character now. So it doesn't really matter to whether he's alive or not. The universal karma is that now his name is linked to evil.
Oh, that's very philosophical, though, because the karma, the justice never came to the man. It came to his memory. Does that matter to the man if he's dead? It's a very interesting question and a bit deep for our podcast. I mean, maybe I should have known better than to introduce Jimmy Savile, the oily rags to this fire. Yeah, maybe I should have known better.
So anyway, are you saying it's a human construct or not?
I think it is a human construct that we like to believe to make ourselves feel better when bad things happen to good people, or when we get a bit of justice happen when we feel like we've been wronged. I think it's completely man-made, yes. You?
Okay. I think we've made it up. I'm not sure it's real. I don't think karma is real. I think we choose to see it. If we want it to happen, like if we have feel we've been wronged, and you wait for something to happen to the person who's wronged you, then that happens, you go, oh, there you go, karma. And then it sort of, you almost make it happen yourself.
It's the same thing as whenever, you know, you're thinking of a loved one or a friend, and then as you're thinking of them, the phone rings and it's them. And you go, oh, isn't that strange? I was just thinking about you when you phoned. Yes. And that's all very romantic and lovely in our own heads. But the truth is, think of all the times you thought of them and they didn't phone. It's just silliness. It's just humans trying to make themselves feel better over coincidence. Putting some sort of faith or idea in the cosmic randomness. It's bollocks, essentially, is what I'm saying.
Okay. Talking of cosmic randomness, that leads me to the next question.
Nice.
Why would humans expect a world run by chaos to be fair?
That's an excellent question.
Of course, you know, the chaos theory that's what we're all living in. The universe is in some way ruled by chaos. I'm not sure that's entirely true, because I think the universe is kind of has some order to it. But
do you? Evidence for this, please?
Well, I just feel like just our solar system, the way it's formed, the way it operates, there's an order to it. Everything takes an amount of time to travel around the sun. That's an order. If it was chaos, we'd just be going around at random speeds. So, I think there's an order to it, isn't there?
Oh, I see. You're sort of thinking more... okay. That's interesting. But, of course, we wouldn't be able to exist in a universe of chaos to that level, because it couldn't support human life. So it's kind of redundant.
So the chaos we're talking about is... Are we talking about the chaos by which we live, that life is chaotic, that actually we don't have much control over what happens to us, the way our life goes.
Yeah.
Because I sometimes feel that I have very little control. I think there are some people who seem to be able to take control of their lives. You know, they're very kind of, they know what they want. I've got a 5-year plan. In 5 years, I'm going to be here. And they make it happen. And I don't work like that. I mean, if anyone asks me, what are you doing in 5 years? My answer is probably going to be the same as I'm doing now.
I think life is sort of completely random as far as anyone who tells you they know what they're doing is, I think, a liar. Although I do think people who have a goal, have a structure and have ambitions are more likely to get where they want to be than people who just bumble through aimlessly. Mm. So I do think you can alter your future with organisation and planning and hard work. But I still think at the end of the day, something could go wrong, which is completely out of your control, which scuppers everything.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't it? There's so much you can't control. You can't control necessarily health issues. You can't necessarily control, you know, you might, even if you've got a plan, you might get to where you want to be and then suddenly that goes tits up. You know, you can't necessarily control it. You know, you get somewhere and the company goes bust, or you get very redundant, or do you know what I mean? Those are things you can't control. But I suppose if you're of the mindset that, well, this is where I want to be, you those things don't necessarily floor you. You go, okay, that's happened, but I've still got my plan. Now, the question, of course, is should we expect a world run by chaos to be fair? So no. If we assume that the world is chaotic, can we expect it to be fair? I mean, that's almost a slightly going back to karma in a way, isn't it? But see, I don't think life is fair. I don't think life is fair because you kind of look at, I don't want to go into politics too much, but it's not fair that those people have got to where, because they all fuck up. They're all self-serving arseholes, right?
Yeah,
it wouldn't be fair in life for those people to get the money, the plaudits, the positions of power. I mean, you can say for some of them it all comes tumbling down, but often not. Yeah, you know, they stay in those positions.
Well, I mean, think of like the most sort of vacuous, brain dead social media influencer, you know, celebrity for the sake of it person. I'll let you imagine whoever you want there, and think that they're in some sort of mansion and they've got millions and billions of sponsorship deals that, you know, they're worth a fortune. And then you've got people, you know, quietly in the background trying to come up with cures for cancer, brain surgeons, you know, people who actually deserve some, you know, respect and probably a bit of looking after, who are just sort of getting on with it in the background whilst these fucking idiots run away with all the money, who provide nothing of any substance to anything. It's not, that's not really fair, is it?
No, but again, you can argue they've made it happen. That's what they wanted. They've made it happen. So they would say it's fair because they've put in whatever you need to put in to become that person. I mean, I don't understand how that thing happens, how somebody who, I don't know, sits there doing tutorials on makeup gets millions of people interested. I don't understand it. I don't get it. But I suppose you could say fair play to them. They've made it happen.
Yeah, I suppose it's, I mean, we were talking about Brian Cox, but I mean, I suppose intelligence isn't quite as sexy as makeup tutorials these days, which is a sad indictment on humanity, but it's kind of fucking true.
I think also when you're talking about fairness in life, you know, I think it's really unfair when people have illnesses that will curtail their life or cause problems in their life. That's not a fairness, is it? You know, that so I sort of feel that that's where life isn't fair. And we I feel that we should expect life to be fair. But it's probably not, because it's random. You know, whoever gets an illness, whoever gets into an accident, for example, that changes their life, you know, that's not a fair thing, is it?
No, I would say life is not fair. You've got to just deal the hand you're given the best you can, and expect the worst. And if it doesn't happen, then think of it as a good day. That's pretty much how I live.
So I think what I'd say is that humans probably shouldn't expect a world run by chaos to be fair, although I would like it to be so.
I agree. We're getting very deep.
Okay. Here's another one. Is human creativity infinite or bounded?
Oh, wow, you're hitting me with some hard questions today. I think...
Well, these are supposed to be unanswerable, aren't they? That's the point of these.
The problem, I think, is that a lot of the sort of creative things you see that you think, oh, that's a new take on something, is then ripped off, imitated, copied, ad infinitum. And there's probably going to be someone who points out, well, actually, that's just a sort of slightly new take on a very old idea. So I suppose, yes, new things will pop up now and again, but I think it's mainly... quite rare. It's like hen's teeth, an actual new, brand new idea that's never been done before.
But a new take on something is a new creative approach on something. So that's a creative impulse, isn't it? To take a new look at something and come up with something slightly different. So you would say that just because someone's taking an old idea and doing something new with it, that's still creativity. You wouldn't say that there's no creativity involved in that.
It depends if you're defining creativity as something brand new or just, I mean, this podcast, for example, other people do podcasts where they talk nonsense for a while. But this is our brand of nonsense.
Exactly.
So is this new or is this just our brand of something else? I don't know.
Well, I mean, you could argue whether this is creative or not, I suppose. So I don't know. I mean, obviously, creativity is somewhat bounded by our limitations, isn't it? You know, but I suppose we're always expanding our limitations. If you look at I was watching a documentary this week about the James Webb Telescope, and
oh, yeah.
And you look at the creativity involved in making that thing work. And then what that is now giving us in return, those incredible images, looking back in time almost to the beginnings of the universe. And you feel that's sort of unbounded, but it's also bounded by the fact that we can't go too far out with it. I think it's about 1 million miles from the Earth. It's in this particular orbital pattern. And that's sort of bounded, but the creativity that got us there is incredible, isn't it?
Well, I suppose the answer then would have to be yes, we are bound, and we are bound by the laws of the universe. If it's impossible to see a certain distance, even with everything available to us and all the technology that could ever exist at its peak, there will still be certain things that it can't do, can't see, can't discover. So, yes, I suppose we are bound by the laws of the universe.
Okay, well, I think I probably agree. I think our minds probably have some sort of infinite creativity if you can get into it. Like those people that are truly creative, I admire those people. I know I mention him a lot, but someone like Bob Mortimer, you know,
yes.
The creativity is almost infinite from within his brain. And that's something I envy and admire. Whereas I feel like my brain's creativity is probably limited somewhat. right, here's another question. Can human nature ever really be changed? And if so, should it be?
So as in, could you completely rewire your brain to think in a way that you never have before and permanently change it?
I suppose so. I mean, I've sort of looked at this question as a more collective experience that I feel, I mean, I have very little faith in the human race, really. And I think individually humans can be amazing. You know, you wouldn't be friends with human beings if you despise all human beings. I just feel collectively we often get it so wrong. And I would like human nature to change collectively so that we all just be nicer to each other. Let's not have wars. Let's not have division. I know we all have different opinions, but let's not get to a point where we are harming each other because of them. And I would like to change that. I think we should change that, but I don't know if we can. I feel that because of our very... Yeah, we are tribal animals.
Yeah.
That's what we are. And therefore, we look for tribes. And I think I'm often one where I don't really find a tribe where I belong. So therefore, I don't really like the tribal thing. But I feel that I'm probably sort of... I'm not in step with the rest of the world there, you know?
My answer is a little depressing, and it's basically no. I think humans are inherently selfish. And even when they say, let's all get on the same page, take religion. I won't pick any specific religion because I don't want to offend anyone specifically.
Yeah, yeah.
But take any given religion where everyone who is part of that says, yes, this is what we are. We are a member of this religion. Even within that, you'll find squabbling, differences of opinion, backbiting. Yeah. Well, that's not quite how I perceive God. Oh, well, you should be doing this. You're not as holy as I am. That there's still squabbling and nastiness, even within cults of the same belief system. So, no, even when people appear to think they're on the same page or part of the same religion or team or tribe, I still think the squabbling there shows that we can't ever really get on the same page to do something for the good of everyone rather than I'm a better religious person than you, even though we're on the same team. I still think no is the depressing but truthful answer.
So you feel that we can't change human nature. I mean, I think sadly I'm of the agreement there, because I feel like if we could change human nature, we would have done by now. When I often think about the world and the future that I won't see, because lifespan is your lifespan is your lifespan here, but I'm talking maybe in thousands of years, maybe even millions of years, will we get to a point where we can all live side by side, where we're not all fighting over a bit of land or over religion or over whatever it is? Will we ever get to a point where it's not worth us fighting and killing each other for this? Will we ever get to that point? And I sort of feel, I do sometimes have hope that at some point in life, the human race will go, yeah, this has been daft, but I sort of doubt it. I have hope that it might happen, but I mean, we're talking millennia down the line.
Even if some sort of holy sentient being came down from the heavens and said, I am the one true God, all of your religions are ever so slightly wrong, here I am, God from the heavens, there would still be squabbling as to who was praising him the correct or her the, yes, the wrong or right way. I even think back to when I was little enough to go to church. Well, I mean, I haven't been to church in decades now, but even then,
that's why you're damned.
People would be there, all of the same religion, and then you get people who would sing the hymns, lovely. Yeah. And then you get people who would sing the hymns and then put their arms in the air to be nearer, yes, to God. And then you get people who would stand on the pews to be that much closer. And I think, I'll sit down, you prick. And I thought, yeah, we're supposed to be on the same team here, but there's still this level of one-upsmanship as to I'm a bit better than you. And yes, I just thought, I'll sit down. So no, unfortunately, even if a sentient God came down from the heavens and explained to us he was, or she was, the one true deity, there'd still be squabbling amongst humans as to who was doing it wrong.
So human nature, you believe, is generally a very selfish thing.
Don't get me wrong, I wish it wasn't. I wish we could all get along, but the truth is, from what I've observed, we won't. And that's very pessimistic and very miserable of me, but I wish we could be better, but life has taught me we're not.
I mean, I think human nature, it can do good, can't it? You know, there's a human, the empathy that is part of human nature that comes about when you see the suffering of people in the world. People can come together to try and make a difference. I mean, often they're thwarted by the evil on the other side that stops the aid getting through or the help getting there. You know, that you often find that there's something that thwarts the goodness of human nature. But there is a goodness also as human nature. And I have to remind myself of that when I get very down on the human race, that collectively, despite what I said earlier about not having faith in the human race collectively, but collectively, the human race can do some great things, because human nature is sympathetic. It is able to empathize.
I think you would be able to get groups, maybe even large groups, of completely selfless, lovely people who were willing to sacrifice even their own existence for the benefit of mankind. However, the idea of getting everyone on the planet on board on the same page to do that, not a chance.
So basically what we're saying is you don't feel it can be changed.
I don't know.
If you could change it, would you?
Well, yes, because that would presumably, I mean, end all wars, all starvation, it would end everything. Although we might then become a planet full of basically sheep, but that's probably better than all the problems in the world. I don't know. Would you rather be a peace-loving sheep or a human with your own ideology and identity? It's a bit of a tough one.
A peace-loving sheep sounds a great thing to me. Right, one more. We've been very, it's been very deep and serious. This
it has, it's unusual.
So we'll finish with a slightly lighter note. If Cinderella's shoe fit her perfectly, then why did it fall off? Never thought of that, have you? Never thought of that. She lost the, what was it? It was a glass slipper, wasn't it? That she lost. No, it fit perfectly. It was only when she was running away it fell off. And did it fall off if it fits so well? Good question, isn't it?
Well, it wasn't like, you know, Velcroed on, and it wasn't like tied up in a double bow and then tucked into the insole of a shoe. It, I mean, the clue is in the word slipper. It slips on and it slips off.
Also, how did it not fit perfectly any other woman in the whole town? Like, it's very unlikely that Cinderella was the only person with that shoe size in the whole town.
Also, why not say who has the other glass slipper? Rather than this endless, because you quite rightly point out there could be many women with the same feet size, but I'd want the woman who has the other shoe. That would be the proof, wouldn't it?
But wasn't the glass slipper turned into a glass slipper? Like, everything turned back at midnight, didn't it? So she may not have the other. Mind you, that one still exists. So if everything turned back into what it was originally at midnight, why did that not turn back into whatever it was, like her terrible, horrible sort of slipper?
Well, because I mean, if you were the charming prince and you had this glass slipper, why didn't the glass slipper turn back into whatever
it
was?
Yeah,
some dirty old plimsoll or something.
Exactly. Yeah, that one seemed to survive the midnight curfew.
You seem to have found a crucial flaw in the story of Cinderella.
Why has no one brought this up before?
So, yeah, I mean, but if you were the charming prince and you had some, you know, glass slipper that somehow was the only garment that didn't change back, and you were met with some bedraggled old hag who had some horrible stinking old plimsoll who said, "I think you'll find that's mine. Look, this is the same size." You'd probably think, "Yeah, nah, that's all right, love. I'll keep looking for the gorgeous princess."
Would you not recognise her face, though? Like, although everything else changed back, like her dress turned into the raggedy old clothes she had on. Obviously the horses were now mice again. The coach was it a pumpkin that was turned into a coach? You can recognise her face, surely, unless you weren't looking at her face, which says more about you than it does about her, you dirty old bastard.
Or maybe she was watching one of those YouTube sort of makeup tutorials from an influencer, and it all wore off at midnight.
Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Before we go, as always, a couple of recommendations. Got anything for us this week, Ben?
You might remember I recently put in the new Mitchell and Webb Aren't Helping or Are Not Helping sketch show into Cautionary Corner.
Yes.
I'm afraid to say it's coming out of Cautionary Corner, and it needs to be... We don't have a grave. We need some sort of burial site for this. It's terrible. I did say it was hit and miss, and I think that was me being generous. It is dreadful. I'm really sorry. I love Mitchell and Webb. And the way I described it to someone recently who asked me about it was, imagine the great body of work of Mitchell and Webb as a glorious swimming pool. This would be the turd floating with inside that swimming pool. It's appalling. It's not remotely funny. And it pains me to say it. Avoid Mitchell and Webb Aren't Helping like the plague.
But I've not got beyond the first episode yet, and you kind of now put me off watching it. I might not bother.
Feel free to make your own opinion, give it your own chance, but I thought it was terrible. I'm only about four episodes in, and I'm officially washing my hands of it, giving up.
Okay, well, that's a worry for me now. Now I've got to make the choice, do I persevere with it or not?
Okay. There is the odd, occasional shimmer of a good idea, and even then, it never pays off quite like you want it to. It's just a big disappointment. Sorry.
Okay. All right, well, that's moved out of culture. We've never gone beyond Cautionary Corner before. It's now, well, I don't know what we call it, the creative grave.
Yes.
I don't know what we call it. But
it's not a very snappy title, but yeah, we need something.
I've got a couple of things to recommend. A drama series has just been on ITV, so it's on ITVX for catch-up, called I Fought the Law. It's four episodes. It's a true story of a woman's fight for justice for her daughter who was murdered. Anne Ming is the lady in question, and she basically took I think 13 or 14 years to get there.
Wow.
But took on the law to get rid of the double jeopardy law, because the guy who murdered her daughter hadn't been convicted of the murder, but then went round boasting that he'd done it, was done for perjury, but couldn't be retried for the murder. And she went all the way to the top and got the law changed, and retrospectively, so that the bastard who killed her daughter could be tried for the murder.
Now, I thought, so I'm assuming this is in the US, is it?
No, this is here. This is in the UK.
Okay, because the way I understood the double jeopardy thing to work was you can't be tried for the same crime twice unless new evidence is presented. Now, I'd have thought saying not guilty and getting away with it, then saying in public, I'm guilty, I'd have thought that was a confession, which would have been new evidence enough in itself.
No, the old law was that whatever happened, you couldn't be tried for the same crime again.
Oh, even with new evidence?
Yeah. So he's, the only thing they could convict him on at that time was perjury, because he confessed to the murder, and because he'd lied under oath to say that he hadn't done it. That's all they could get him on, which is why she fought so hard to get the law changed and eventually won it.
Oh, what a hero.
Yeah, an absolute hero. It's a brilliant drama. Sheridan Smith plays Anne Ming. It's obviously a very sad thing, but it's a brilliant TV drama, superbly done.
Brilliant.
On a lighter note, I want to recommend a bit of stand-up comedy I came across this week, again on ITVX. Do you know Marcus Brigstocke? Are you a fan of Marcus Brigstocke?
He's very good.
I think it's a couple of years old. I'd never sort of come across this before. It's an hour of stand-up called Absolute Shower. If you know Marcus Brigstocke, you know he's sort of slightly acerbic, but wry look at the world. You'll know all about him. It's really well done. The only thing I would say is the fucking adverts on ITVX. I mean, they milk the advertising to, I think in an hour of stand-up, if you include the ads at the beginning, there's 6 ad breaks.
Ooh.
And really badly done as well. Like midway through a fucking sentence, the ads come in. It's really badly done, and that did spoil it a little bit. But if you can get around that, it's a really good hour of stand-up.
Nice.
The final thing I'm going to recommend is sometimes something happens in the world that just makes you think. We were talking about creativity earlier, and I caught a little bit of the last night of the proms, right? And what I caught was an exceptional version of Bohemian Rhapsody, celebrating 50 years of that song. And it was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. It included Brian May on the guitar and Roger Taylor on the gong, and it was just amazingly done. It's absolutely, if you've got 5 minutes of your time, just go onto BBC iPlayer and just watch that. It's incredible.
I'm assuming you could probably also find that on YouTube as well.
I would imagine it's on YouTube by now, yes. But
lovely.
I just felt that the world was a better place after watching that for five. I mean, it's one of my favourite songs. So if you don't like the song, I guess it's not for you. But just incredibly. You kind of feel that the way it was done is probably how Freddie Mercury would have loved to have heard it.
That's nice. You see, in a world full of misery and pain, it is nice to carve out these little nuggets of fun and satisfaction,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Exactly. Some good things in the world. They're few and far between, but they are there if you look for them. So there we are. That's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget you can get in touch with us anytime about anything. We're at Trevor and Ben on X, and we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.